1984. I am sitting in the back of a police car, like someone accused of a crime. It is the first night of summer in Boston. I do not have on handcuffs. I have not been read my rights. I am a victim, not a prisoner, but the difference between the two has completely escaped me tonight, and will for the rest of my life. My wrists and ankles are red and bruised from the phone cord that tied them together behind my back, attaching them to my ankles and pulling my knees up behind me, a position I've heard called hogtied when referring to steer in a rodeo. There is a deep bite mark on my neck, and I am torn from my vagina to my anus. In about 30 minutes, a doctor will note that this tear is like one a woman might get while giving birth for the first time. I am headed to an emergency room for a visit that will take several hours, and am aware that they may want to admit me. Over my dead body, I think. I will need stitches, a pregnancy test, and antibiotics to treat any sexually transmitted infections that can still be prevented. In about a year, we will know enough about HIV for me to think I might have contracted it from one of these two men. They were likely IV drug users. I bled. When I finally summon the courage to get an HIV test a couple of years later, the wait for the result seems endless. It is one thing that goes in my favor. Later, I'll remember this moment and think of it as the easy part. I don't need one, I say about the pregnancy test. That's what everyone thinks, the examiner says. It's just a baseline. If someone learns they're pregnant in a few weeks and didn't get a test done, it might be harder to know for sure who the father was. Father? That couldn't possibly be what she meant to say, I wonder. It turns out that legally, it is indeed a relevant term. At the time of my attack, most states gave men who fathered through rape the same custody and visitation rights as other male parents. As recently as 2012, 31 states still allowed these rights, and in the present day, a few have yet to change them. The existence of these laws means a woman impregnated through rape may have no choice but to bargain away her legal rights to a criminal trial in exchange for the rapist dropping the bid to have access to her child. According to those who write our laws, the perpetrator is a father who has rights that must be honored. The victim and her needs and rights, not so much. The ride to the hospital lives in shadow. I look around the police car and stay as quiet as possible. It is daybreak, and as the sun rises, the cold steel surrounding me slowly illuminates, softening from black to gray. There is a metal cage and bulletproof glass between the back and front seat of the car, and I wonder how the police officers would know if I needed them for anything. All I can see is the balding head of the driver, stray wisps of hair peeking out from his cap. If only I had some scissors, I think. His partner has a short ponytail and isn't wearing her hat. Her head keeps whirling around to look at me, and she is saying something, but all I can hear is the timbre, not the words. At least her voice is soft. My ears are ringing. Just moments before, these officers had come into my apartment building with their guns drawn. They found me sitting on the floor in a corner of the apartment across the hall from mine. I tried calling the police from my apartment, but the cord had been sliced with a knife, and the phone was dead. I hadn't met my neighbors across the hall before this, and must have been a disturbing sight when I knocked. I need to make a call, I croaked out, walking through the threshold uninvited, barefoot and disheveled. They asked me no questions, led me to the phone, and disappeared quickly into their rooms. I tried to make myself as small as possible in the unfamiliar apartment. Perhaps I would be mistaken for a speck of dust, and the police would leave me be. I'm not even sure why I called them. Are you injured? Are you safe? What is your name? I hear a voice from somewhere inside my body say, Michelle, and the word startles me. It sounds vaguely like a curse. The female officer puts her gun away and stands next to where I'm sitting on the floor. I lean on her leg and start to shake. The other person I call is my friend Laura, who lives about 5 blocks away. She arrives, having run the whole way, and opens her mouth as if to speak, but no words emerge. I reach up for her hand, and we trek the distance from the apartment to the police car, a few feet at most, my legs feeling like they're traveling halfway around the world.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.